Welcome to the Unsweetened SIO podcast. My name is Siobhan Harris. I am a certified integrative nutrition health coach and the founder of unsweetenedsio.com. I gave up all sugar and all flour on January 13th, 2018, and am finally free of my addiction. My mission is to help other sugar addicts find their path to freedom and live the sweet life without sugar. Hi everyone, just wanted to talk to you real quickly about my new and improved 10-week breaking free program. It's all about sugar addiction recovery in a group setting. I expanded it from 7 weeks to 10 weeks. The next session is going to start on Monday, March the 7th. It includes weekly group Zoom calls. These will be recorded if you can't make it live. They're usually about an hour and a half long on Mondays at 9 a.m. Pacific time, 12 noon Eastern time, or whatever that is in your time zone. So if you can't make it, don't worry, they are recorded. We also will include this time as a bonus a 45-minute one-on-one coaching / emotion code session with me. Everyone will receive that. We also have daily accountability buddies for daily support. There's weekly discussions, topics, homework, many tools, tips, resources, provides community and accountability. And I'm also including a VIP program that includes 4 one-on-one sessions with me, where again, we'll do emotion and body code. So if you're interested, please go to my website, unsweetenedsio.com, and click on the group coaching program. There's another document that I created there that will give you a lot more details. The regular pricing is $9.95 with VIP pricing at $12.95. So this is something that I've made from feedback from my other group clients, and I'm really, really excited to debut this in March and hope that you can join. Again, you can look for more information on my website, unsweetenedsio.com, look under group coaching, or feel free to send me an email. Thank you. Hi, everyone, and welcome to episode 130 of Unsweetened SIO, the podcast. Today, I'm very excited to have Dr. Joanne Gordon with us. Dr. Joanne Gordon is a naturopathic physician and has been helping people for over 20 years at her clinic in Oregon City, Oregon. Her practice focuses on hormones and regenerative medicine. With her background in orthopedic and sports, Dr. Gordon found that when her patients' hormones were optimized, their healing was quicker and patients felt better sooner. While focusing on hormones, Dr. Gordon learned about the power of optimizing insulin, not only for weight loss, but also to help reduce pain and inflammation, as well as a myriad of other chronic conditions. Since the discovery of insulin's effect on chronic disease, Dr. Gordon has been dedicated in educating her patients and outlying community about the benefits of optimizing their insulin levels and improving health for a better quality of life. Love this so much. So welcome. So glad to have you here today with us.
Thank you. Yeah, it's exciting to be
here. So I found out, Dr. Gordon here is local in Oregon. I live in the Portland area. And actually my mom is in Oregon City and has seen Dr. Gordon, but she forwarded me this email about you offering a fasting insulin test. And that is something, as I know a lot of listeners can can kind of connect with here, that is really, really hard for people to get as far as getting more details about like a better blood panel. So I was just right away like, ooh, this is so cool that she's offering it, and kind of reached out to her and wanted to have her on today to really talk about insulin, you know, and we hear that word a lot, but I think even I, there's still a lot I can learn about how it works, why it's important, and all the different things. So I'm really, really excited to have you here to kind of dig into, I'm calling it almost like insulin 101 here. Yeah. But to get started, tell us a little bit about your background and how you got your practice to kind of focus on hormones and regenerative medicine. What kind of led you to specialize in those areas?
Yeah, so my background, before I went to naturopathic medical school, I was a physical therapist. And so when I graduated from naturopathic school, it was just kind of a natural way to kind of go into regenerative medicine because I knew my orthopedics so well, and I specialized in orthopedics and sports medicine. And while I was doing that, of course, applying all the naturopathic principles to regenerative medicine, so people with joint pain, I've always, you know, for years and years telling everybody, you know, no wheat, dairy, and sugar. That was like the three things that I've been telling people for the last 22 years. And after learning about insulin, I realized it's really not just about wheat, dairy, and sugar, right? But that's kind of in school, you know, those are the three most common food allergens. But anyway, when I started to work with these patients and noticed that when I optimized their hormones, I started getting into hormones and menopause. A lot of people, you know, have, you know, perimenopause, you know, everyone's getting older, and realizing that people healed a lot quicker and, you know, felt a lot better. And so getting into hormones that way. And then, you know, insulin's a hormone. And so once I learned about, you know, insulin, and I had like a little bit of a paradigm shift probably 10 years ago now, and just really looking at, you know, it's not really about what you're eating, but also when you're eating, and understanding insulin's impact a little bit more. It's not really wasn't talked about in school, you know, insulin. We all know insulin from diabetes, but to be able to look at insulin, you know, pre-diabetic is really, you know, a game changer.
Yeah, I think that exactly that, looking at that pre-diabetes is such a key to optimizing our health. Yeah. So yeah, tell us a little bit more, even that insulin is a hormone. I don't know if a lot of people realize that, but maybe just kind of give us a basic overview of insulin and what it does in the body, how it works.
Yeah, so insulin is secreted by the pancreas. So every time you eat, you know, you're eating proteins, carbs, fats. And so your body really doesn't respond to calories. Oftentimes people are always calorie counting, but your body really responds to what you're eating, more the macronutrient type. And your body senses that, and it'll secrete hormones in response to that. And the primary hormone that we're most concerned with is insulin. And so if you eat carbs, your body's gonna secrete more insulin than if you have fats or protein. And so the insulin goes out, and it's a storage hormone. So it's going to, and it's also a growth hormone. So it's going to help you, you know, it helps repair, it helps grow muscle. You know, oftentimes bodybuilders will use it, but at certain times, but also, you know, it's a storage hormone primarily. And your body cannot burn fat and store fat at the same time. And so if your insulin's always up from a hormone standpoint, your body's always going to be storing it and not burning it.
Yeah, that's so interesting. Yeah. So what happens like when you eat something, say that's higher in carbs, or what does that do? And then I'm curious about that cycle then. So once the insulin it secretes, and then, you know, is there, sometimes we feel that dip, you know? So I'm curious about kind of the cycle of how that works and when your kind of levels might balance back out, like after having maybe a heavier carb or sugar loaded meal.
Yeah. So when you eat a high carb meal, you know, the insulin has to secrete. And I tell my patients too, like everyone's different, you know, so you and I both could eat the same carb meal, same bowl of cereal, and we're going to secrete different amounts of insulin. So it's not the same. And so if you're more insulin resistant than me, say, you know, you're going to secrete more insulin than I might secrete. And so when you secrete a lot, when you're insulin resistant, it means you need more insulin to get your cells to respond. And insulin signals your body to, you know, pick up the sugar, kind of bring it into the liver, store it, put it into the fat cells for later use. And so when we have that big insulin load, then it's going to pull the sugar out, and then you get the drop. So that kind of affects people emotionally as well as physically, right? You know?
Yeah, I bet a lot of people can relate to that. I mean, definitely I can, as when before I really changed my eating, I'd have those, yeah, like really low dips then. And then that, of course, a lot of times then makes you crave something for that quick fix to go back up. So would you say that's kind of the common cycle for most people on the standard American diet, where they're just caught in that high and low as, you know, as the insulin kind of spikes up and down?
Yeah, well, it definitely does. I know, you know, it affects people. Sugar is an addiction, right? So we do get addicted to sugar. It's the number one toxin that I think, and it's, you know, affects people. I know myself, if I get in a funk, you know, I want to have some ice cream or a bowl of cereal, some kind of high sugar, and it puts me up, you know, and makes me feel actually terrible, right? And then it comes back down. And, but then you, and then it affects you emotionally, right? So then you want to keep, you know, depending on how much you're affected by it, if you want to continue in your bad mood, you can keep it up. But then it takes, you have to do kind of like a cleanse, like kind of stop it. Because it can be addicting. You just kind of have to say, okay, I'm going to stop and retrain my body.
Yeah.
I think it also affects the gut, you know, microbiome, you know, so the microbial in the digestive system is being affected. And I think that also can cause you to crave stuff.
Yeah. Well, and that's, yeah, what's so kind of, you know, this, all the, how the insulin work is just so fascinating to me, because it's something I think a lot of people only think if they need to be concerned about if they are diabetic. You know, like for me, I always thought, oh, insulin was actually like a good thing, you know, like that's what, and I guess it is in a way, but you know, you think of someone with diabetes that they are taking insulin just to keep their blood sugar, you know, balanced. I never really thought about it before, as until I was diagnosed with polycystic ovary syndrome and was kind of even introduced to this concept of insulin sensitivity. So to me, that was the first time that I really learned, oh, wow, okay, this is something that I actually need to pay attention to and is affecting me now. And is really a precursor to if you are insulin resistant, and then that can lead into things like prediabetes and diabetes. So it's really a good thing, I think, for people just to get a handle on, the earlier, the better.
Yeah, because what they found is that your insulin can be high for many years prior to diagnosing with a diabetes. And you might never even get diabetes, depending on your, you know, doesn't necessarily mean it causes diabetes, but it definitely does lead to that. My mom, you know, she's definitely insulin resistant, and, you know, but she doesn't have diabetes per the medical, you know, so you, diabetes is your hemoglobin A1C is a certain, you know, above 6.5, and, you know, other markers. And so if you can kind of look at these markers prior to health problems, then you can, that's the essence of preventative medicine, right? And so I myself have PCOS, you know, and I didn't know until I was 50, because along the way, I was making changes, you know, but I mean, I was gain weight, you know, hirsutism, you know, facial hair, like a lot of different symptoms I definitely had. I just was managing them because I'm a doctor, you know, naturopathic doctor. I knew how to change my diet. I found, you know, thyroid hormones, you know, different things like that can really help. But insulin is the main thing. And now I know why, you know, it's so easy to gain weight because my insulin was being affected. But you can test for insulin prior. So oftentimes people come in, you know, Dr. Bickman says, you know, insulin optimal is at 5. And so if you come in with an insulin, get your fasting insulin tested, your blood sugar is normal. You know, your blood sugar is normal. Your hemoglobin A1C is, you know, 5.5, but your insulin is at 20. You know, that's a problem. You know, so being able to look at that, and it's really not about the sugar, it's about the insulin, even though they are related. It is about the sugar, but it's the insulin that's causing much of the inflammation in the body.
And this is just, unfortunately, the insulin isn't a test that, you know, people are testing for regularly. Like that's usually something, from what I hear and from my own experiences, that you really have to advocate for. And then sometimes still get a lot of pushback from the medical community of, well, you don't need that. And so, yeah, I think that's, then we don't have that full picture of our health. If we have, like you said, if you are one of those people where you're, you know, you might be okay on the blood sugar test, but that your insulin's really high. I just think that's good information to know.
Yeah, well, it is missed, and people, the doctors aren't doing, it's not a standard test. Probably Medicare doesn't pay for it. If your hemoglobin A1C is not high enough, then there's nothing to treat, you know, standard medical. So it's just, it is a shame. But since I found out about it, we've been testing it. I have a wellness panel that looks at all your markers. And also, you know, the lipid panel can be really informative, like your triglycerides. If your triglycerides are high, that's also an indication that there might be a problem with a low HDL. So looking at those numbers as well can be a pretty good marker for insulin resistance and cholesterol problems.
Yeah. So what would you recommend if someone does do this kind of panel and they find that their insulin is high? And I think a lot of people probably feel, even if they aren't like your mom, you know, might not be diabetic, but probably still feel pretty crappy. I mean, I'm sure they're feeling a lot of symptoms like, you know, maybe being tired or moody, energy crashes, brain fog. I mean, all kinds of things that I think, unfortunately, we have kind of normalized as a society of, oh, that's just the way adults feel, you know, and yeah, we'll combat that with some extra caffeine and whatever, like, without really realizing that it's actually not normal to feel unwell. Like there, you really can feel really healthy. So how do you kind of get people started if they come in and they have a higher insulin test? How do you help them kind of start reversing that to more normal levels, healthier levels?
Yeah, so I start with, you know, education, of course. And the education revolves around, you know, what you're eating and also when you're eating. And so I said, you know, if you change nothing in your diet, I think, unfortunately, you know, we were trained to eat, you know, back in the early days, maybe in the 60s and 70s, you ate three meals a day, right? And then in the 70s, I guess, is when they started, you know, with the low fat, you know, in the early 80s, you know, eat low fat and eat more often. Those two factors really have caused a lot of problems, because when you eat low fat, that means the sugar content is higher. Plus it's a processed food, right? So processed foods really, you know, aren't very healthy for you. And so what we wanna do is, I educate all my patients to eat real food. So you wanna eat real food, and then also try to, in order to, every time you eat, your insulin is being secreted. And so what we want to do is have less insulin secretions over time. And so if you can do, you know, maybe a little bit of intermittent fasting, even if it's just 12 hours, Dr. Fung said, if you didn't change your diet at all, but just kind of ate within everything the same within a 6-hour period rather than 12, 14-hour period, you'll lose weight. And that's because of the insulin. That to me was an eye opener, because like, it's really not only about what we're eating, but it's also about when we're eating. So I try to educate people on that as well. In addition to, I think, a lower carb for sure, lower processed foods is really, so instead of saying no wheat, dairy, sugar all the time, I'm saying eat real food. You know, it's the processed foods that really, because their sugar is half fructose. And so the fructose really wreaks havoc. If you're eating, say, rice, that's all glucose, but it is a real food. And so it's not going to harm you as much as, that's why the Chinese or in Japan, in China, they have a lot of rice, but not as much diabetes or blood sugar problems. So I'd rather have them eat real food than eating a lot of processed foods to start with, for sure.
Yeah. I mean, I think that's good advice for everybody. It's just eat more, real foods, stay away from the processed foods. And that's true, you know, of whether you're on a keto plan or you might be a vegan, I think everyone can agree that, less processed foods, less sugar. I mean, I don't think there's anyone saying, you know, eating sugar is a healthier way to go. So, but that's such a huge change for most people, again, on that standard American diet, because that's, like, I grew up, you know, I was born late 70s, grew up in the 80s, when all that stuff was coming out, like the low fat stuff, you know, the fat free snacks, which I just ate, you know, thought fat was bad. It was just replaced with sugar, which I'm sure just fueled my sugar addiction, since I was addicted at a really early age. But yeah, that's just kind of what we, you know, just kind of thought was the right thing to do, is just have, you know, and eat more and more, like throughout the day, like you're saying, where getting away from that three meals a day. So just kind of eating too frequently.
Yeah, too frequently. I just want to say, I had a patient that was eating, you know, real whole food diet, but he was having a lot of honey. And so when he was, you know, I said, you got to cut back on that honey. He was going through a lot of honey. I mean, honey can be, you know, it is a better, but not really, if you're, especially if you're having too much of it.
Yeah. Yeah, exactly. I mean, it's better. I know a lot of people that aren't addicted to sugar, like, cause I don't, you know, don't do any sweetener at all, even the honey maple syrup, but it is for people that aren't addicted and are just eating a bit of it, you know, maple syrup or honey would be better than the other stuff, but yeah, everything. Yeah. Too much is still gonna spike those insulin levels up. So after you have kind of coached people on this, of changing their diet, tweaking their diet, do you typically test them again and see if that, like, and what's the time period of that? Like, how long would you say it takes people? Is it like 3 months or 6 months? And I'm sure everyone's a little bit different, but on average, what do you kind of find for people?
Yeah, on average, I'll retest within 3 months. So, you know, usually 10 weeks. I try to get them before 3 months, just before. But yeah, I think within a 3 month time is really good. It gives people enough time to make the changes. I don't like to have them go too long, because then it's not enough feedback. Unless I've been working with them. So initially, within 3 months, I like to retest, because you can really see changes in cholesterol. There's a cholesterol on there, and then your HDL and the blood sugar, and, you know, a lot of the other markers that I'm looking at can be affected by that.
And do you find that most people, if they are making those changes of, you know, what they eat and when they eat, do you find that they, those numbers do lower, and then do they report feeling better?
Yeah. Well, that's why I love what I do, is because people come in and, you know, it's more like, I lost 12 pounds and I just feel so much better, you know, more clear-headed, you know, feeling better. I focus a lot on, you know, joint pain. Like this last lady last week, you know, like she was saying how much better she felt, this and that. And then joint pain was a big one for her. And I said, well, you, and I'm like, by the way, like, how are your joints? She goes, oh, they're better, you know? And so to me, that's huge, you know? And I do get a lot of, I mean, but people that follow the plan do really well. You know what I mean? If you actually, you know, take it to heart to really reduce the carbs, reduce the frequency, even, you know, just stopping eating after dinner, you know, you'll sleep better, you know, sleep is so important, you know, you'll feel better, your mood's better. It's just very inspiring to me.
People can't see you right now, but you just have this huge smile on your face. When I asked you that question, you can tell how passionate you are about helping people. Because again, this is something people just don't realize, you know, how much power they really have over their own health just by tweaking their nutrition. Like, we really think, you know, there's so much, we are so empowered to do so much for ourselves with like just a little bit of effort, really.
Yeah. Doesn't take much. And I think that, I mean, what would make me so happy is someone to listen to this podcast, right? And then say, you know, they incorporate some of the changes, and then to, you know, let you know, oh yeah, I feel so much better after doing these simple changes. You know, it affects people in so many ways, you know, joint pain, you know, gut discomfort, you know, and that's another thing. A lot of times people that have GI problems, by giving your gut a rest, there's so much healing that goes on. The intestinal tract, they have one of the highest turnover cells in the body every 12 hours, I think. And when you give your gut a rest, you know, oftentimes that, you know, leaky gut type of symptoms will start to dissipate, and food allergies and sensitivities will go down just from not eating so much, giving your gut a rest, which also affects your insulin.
Right. So you're kind of saying, you know, for that intermittent fasting, like, you know, giving your body at least that 12 hours plus whatever people can do, just to really, yeah, so they're not. And that's what I, when I first learned about intermittent fasting, I didn't realize, like, because, you know, you're that's the hard thing with nutrition and health. A lot of times there's two different things you're being told that totally contradict each other. So, you know, when people say, oh, little small meals throughout the day are good, but then I never really thought about the consequences that has, because yeah, then your body is using most of its energy on the digestive, you know, process versus that kind of really healing, you know, thing. You know, they can't, it can't even really get to that. Where if you are giving yourself a break, you know, and I try to do, I'm probably maybe like about 14 hours most of the time, maybe a little bit longer sometimes. And yeah, just, and I do think about that during that time, like kind of telling my body, okay, get to this other stuff, you know, get, you know, let's do this deep healing.
Well, I do think that, I mean, I have patients that will come in. I have a patient last week. She said, you know, they have came across a new diet and, you know, it involved eating every 2 hours, you know, and whatever they were eating, you know, they have a whole little plan that they're doing. And I just, you know, I don't say anything because they know I do intermittent fasting and they will lose weight. You know, they'll lose weight because it's less calorie, but it's affecting insulin all the time. And so what I tell also is people that like to juice. I have another patient that she was liking to juice in the morning, like first thing in the morning, wake up, do this veggie juice. I said, well, why don't you wait for your veggie juice, like before lunch, you know, instead of having it first thing in the morning, just wait so you don't get that insulin spike right away. You know, just have some, you know, water, lemon water or something, just to kind of give yourself that break and don't spike your insulin so quickly.
Yeah. And I think a lot of people don't realize that with the juicing, even though, you know, like if it's not adding any sugar, that's still going to be, you know, really a big spike on insulin. And recently I did a podcast interview with talking about continuous glucose monitor, CGMs, mm-hmm. and how interesting, you know, as we were kind of talking about earlier, we're all very different. So what might be giving you a big insulin spike might not be giving me as big of an insulin spike. So there are kind of ways to figure out more like what's working for you individually. You know, it's always kind of fascinating for me to see that. Like, and for me, I know cereal, back when I used to eat cereal, that was one thing that like really skyrocketed for me, where other people, they might not have that same response. Same with bananas. I'm very sensitive to bananas, where other people might not be. So it's really interesting to see, because we all are very different. And a lot of times it's just paying attention to how you feel after you eat something. And then when you make these changes, and what I love is that you're saying you test again after 10 weeks, that's really that not that long of a time that people are seeing pretty dramatic changes. So I think that's really hopeful for people listening, is that you can see, make these big changes pretty quickly. Mm-hmm. And especially, I'm sure now you might come across people that are kind of find out maybe through this that they are addicted to sugar. I know, you know, like maybe they try to give it up and like, okay, I can do this. And then realize, oh my gosh, like this is really, really hard. Like I can't, you know, for people that aren't addicted, it's a little easier to remove the thing, you know, the sugar and the processed food. But for people that are truly addicted, I'm sure you see some of your patients really struggle with it.
One of the things I want to mention is the numbers can change, but oftentimes the physicalities don't change as quickly. Mm-hmm. So I tell patients, you know, from a hormone standpoint, because I do all the hormones as well, that it takes, you know, a good year, because it's very gradual. And also the weight loss isn't just coming off. If someone's trying to intermittent fast or, you know, use their insulin, you know, for a weight loss program, I mean, it takes a while. It's not like your insulin's just going to be normal and then you're going to, you know, drop 30 pounds immediately. You still have that time of weight loss time that's, you know, takes, you know, pound a week or whatever it may be to slowly lose.
Yeah. And that's really the sustainable way to do it too. You know, for a lot of people, I know for me, you know, giving up sugar and flour was very, I wanted to lose weight, but it did take me a while. But then I thought, you know, this is actually the more sustainable way to do it, because in the past when I had kind of done those fad diets, I would lose it quickly, but just gain it back plus, right. plus, even right. quicker, you know? So, but I know that is frustrating. I know I was like that, like, how can I be eating so much better and not losing weight? But when I like have maybe one or two nights of treating myself, it seems I can gain it a lot faster than losing yeah. it. So I know that is frustrating for people, but I knew for myself that it'd take me in a while to kind of get to where I was, and that it was going to take, I gave myself at least a year of going sugar and flour free to really see the benefits. And I did, you know, starting in about 5 months was starting to lose weight. And by 9 months knew that I was never going back, like, cause I just felt so much better. But I'm really glad I had that. And I'm glad, you know, you talk about that too, because I think if we're looking for that quick fix, like so many people are, you know, we want results tomorrow or yesterday. I think it's really good to kind of change that mindset of being a little more realistic and knowing, again, these are really like long-term changes that you're making, and you will be reaping benefits, you know, in the very beginning.
Yeah, no, you're definitely getting benefits. And I think it's, you know, our body, you know, I talk about metabolic flexibility. You know, we're retraining the body to work differently than it has been. And so if you've been eating every 2 hours, you know, just eating really frequency, your insulin's always up and you're insulin resistant, it's going to take a while for your body to shift to using alternate fuel sources, such as the stored fat. And so it gets uncomfortable in there. And so, you know, making these changes, it's a physical and an emotional roller coaster. And to be able to recognize it and to know that you're on a journey. And, you know, I think that's the key, is that metabolic flexibility, is to retrain. And it takes time, you know, to retrain. And it takes, you know, a little bit of willpower, if you would. I mean, people, because of the addictions and the different hormones that can get released, leptins, ghrelins, you know, there's all different types of things that are affecting us from a hunger standpoint that need to be kind of quelled.
Yeah. What if for someone listening right now is thinking, well, why does it matter if my insulin levels are high? Like, what does it matter in the long term? Say, you know, I'm not diabetic, my insulin levels are high, who cares? Like, what if, you know, people are thinking that as they're listening? What do you kind of say to, because I'm sure you kind of probably have patients that also think that, like, why does it matter? Like, what do you kind of tell them?
Yeah. So insulin is kind of like, you know, diabetes is almost like smoking, right? So if you smoke a cigarette every day, I mean, you know, if you smoke, you know, a pack a day, you know, for 20 years, it's going to affect you. If you just smoke one cigarette a week, it's probably going to be okay, right? And so chronic insulin elevation does cause inflammation and problems throughout the body. Every cell has an insulin receptor. And so that's why, like in diabetics, it affects your eyes, it affects your heart. I've been looking at hypertension quite a bit, and, you know, people say, oh, there's no reason for hypertension. Well, I don't think so. I think, you know, the insulin can be a major factor for hypertension because it affects the kidney. It affects, you know, the blood vessels. It affects every cell in the body. And so by, you're going to see subtle differences. So from increased testosterone, so elevated insulin in women causes high testosterone. Elevated insulin in men actually causes estrogen. And so also, you know, joint pain, hypertension, kidney function. Kidney function is so important as we get older. It is kind of subtle. It'll, you know, kidney function should be, you know, above 90. And when you have insulin resistance, it starts to affect the kidneys. And so it starts to decrease. You're not going to notice it until you're near kidney failure, right? You know, because it's just one of those things that you just don't feel, but it is affecting your health at a level that is subclinical. And I think that problem is that most doctors don't care until you do have a symptom. And so we're looking at preventing symptoms from coming. Yeah. So, because we want, I mean, my goal is to have people, you know, live really well, like right up until the end, you know what I mean? Like there's a point, like instead of having this chronic degeneration for 20 to 30 years of, you know, pain or, you know, heart failure, hypertension, you know, all these things that you have to manage medically, we could live a better quality life into our 90s, you know.
I love that so much with the whole, you know, that's what I love about naturopathic medicine. It's more focused on the preventative and looking at the overall body and getting to the root cause, not just addressing this, you know, symptoms as they come up, but actually addressing the underlying root cause. And this is one way, you know, if people can kind of get dialed in on the insulin or just be aware of how important that is and aware of that kind of number and where they fall in that, it really allows them to make some changes now. So like you said, you can, and I think as a society, again, we just think, well, that's part of aging, is that you just kind of fall, you know, become more decrepit each year, but it doesn't have to be that way. So here you, I love that that's kind of what you talk to your patients about and really, you know, on how to, and I love that. Who doesn't want to just live this really healthy life right up to the end, you know, the highest quality that we can live.
Yeah, my inspiration comes from my 80-year-old patients, you know, 90. I have people in their 90s coming in. I mean, I just love that they're vibrant. They're still, you know, have goals and dreams and they're active, you know, being able to, you know, in your 80s, get down on the floor and be able to get up, you know, I mean, that's important.
Yeah. Oh yeah. That mobility is so important. And again, coming back with the chronic inflammation that high insulin can cause, that's really going to affect that, those things like joint pain. And well, I'm so glad that we got to talk about this, and because I think it's really, really important. And again, what's your kind of advice for people that really want to get this test and are having a hard time?
Yeah, I think just ask. I mean, that's where it has to start. You can ask and just say, you know, I learned about, you know, insulin resistance. I refer all my patients to, you know, Dr. Fung's book, Dr. Bickman's book, and I love Dr. Lustig's books too. So The Obesity Code by Dr. Fung, Why We Get Sick by Dr. Bickman, and Dr. Lustig has a book called Metabolical. Those three books is those really good, educational, easy to read. And then also try it out, of course, you know, try doing a little bit of low carb, a little bit of intermittent fasting, and then, you know, educate your physician, or like you have to just, I think maybe justify why you want to get tested, you know, and they should be able to do it. I mean, I don't know.
Yeah. Yeah. Maybe by just sharing some of that knowledge that you have with them, like, you know, that is really, really helpful. Yeah. So, and this is something I really need to set up with you. I still haven't done it and I really want to do this. So thank you so much for coming on today. Is there anything that maybe we didn't get to today regarding insulin that you wanted to talk about, or any just kind of takeaways for people, you know, listening to this conversation today?
Yeah, I think just the awareness of insulin resistance, that it's really not about the sugar. I mean, it is about sugar, but it's not always about sugar. So it's really about, I think that for me, the paradigm shift was like, you know, it's not about like, you know, looking at how much sugar, how many calories I'm getting, because, you know, something that could be very, you know, like an avocado, say, is loaded with fat and much more caloric than a piece of bread, say. But it's a different metabolic effect on the body. And so really trying to think of things when you're eating more from like how much insulin is going to be put out versus how many calories. And I think that's a really big one because we're so calorie focused, but to understand that the body doesn't have a calorie receptor. I love that. You know, the body doesn't have a calorie receptor. It's really responding to what you're eating, and less insulin is going to be secreted with protein and fats. So that's why we like to have a little bit of a lower carb overall.
Oh, I love that. No calorie receptors. That's such a good point. What a nice, good shift, because so many of us are, and so many, that's what we've been trained, you know, it's calories in, calories out. So I really like that shift of thinking about how is this meal going to spike my insulin versus, yeah, how many calories are here? That's beautiful. Thank you so much.
Yeah, you're welcome.
And practice in Oregon. So we'll send your website. So if people have questions, they can get in touch with you. And if you live in Oregon, if you're lucky enough to live in Oregon, you can, you know, set up an appointment as well, either via telehealth, or if you're close to the Portland area, can see you in person. So we'll make sure we link that for everyone as well.
That's great. Yeah, I'm looking forward to hopefully, you know, a lot of people get help from your information. So thank you for sharing it with everybody.
Thank you.
Thank you so much for listening. Have a great day. And remember, life is so much sweeter without sugar.